We're hoping for justice, and I hope we will prevail, if God willing.
Special thanks to Democracy Now!'s Hani Masood. We only have 30 seconds. Bob Boyle, you're Shane Duca's appellate attorney. What is most important to understand? Then we'll continue the interview and post it online.
These were young men, young Muslim men, who were trying to earn a living, who did have certain ideas vocally critical of U.S. policies in Muslim lands, but who did not engage in any illegal activity. It was only because of their religion and their thoughts that the FBI, with no proof of criminality, put two different informants and trapped them into various conversations, but still never were able to prove an agreement to do anything. These are young men who are now serving life without parole under horrendous conditions.
The hearing, the results will be given out in March?
The results should be available in March.
We're going to leave it there. Bob Boyle will continue the conversation at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with our host, Joanne Hardesty. Today's guest is longtime local activist Joe Walsh of Individuals for Justice. We'll talk about winning his federal lawsuit against the city of Portland for excluding him from City Hall.
And I saw records made, music literally written in wax.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 33rd Real Music Film Festival, running through February 8th. Friday, February 5th, will show American Epic. The film pieces together the extraordinary 1920s story of record companies leaving the big city to tour America's backroads and capture for the first time the raw musical expressions of rural cultures. These field recordings, initially aimed for the rural markets from which they came, democratized music and gave voice to the most marginalized demographics in the nation. That's February 5th at 7 p.m. at the Northwest Film Center in the Witzel Auditorium at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on the films and more at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
To America is be true to what you said on paper.
Hi, I'm Shahid Hamid. With each passing year, the words of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. become more and more necessary to remember. With this in mind, the World Arts Foundation and KBOO Foundation members would like to invite you, your family, and friends to their 31st anniversary and tribute to the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Monday, January the 18th, broadcast live from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. from Highland Christian Center in Portland. As in years past, there will be a variety of local and regional choirs, performers, and entertainers, all paying homage to the work and legacy of Dr. King and our efforts to keep his dream alive. So remember, Monday, January the 18th, at the Highland Christian Center, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., and of course, right here on KBOO FM radio.
The greatness of America is the right to protest far right.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 33rd Real Music Film Festival running through February 8th. Tuesday, February 2nd will be They Will Have to Kill Us First. When jihadists took control of northern Mali in 2012, they imposed one of the strictest interpretations of Sharia law in history. Music was banned, radio stations were destroyed, instruments were burned, and musicians faced torture or even death. In a country celebrated for its vibrant musical tradition, the most revered members of society, musicians, were forced into hiding or exile. This film follows Mali's musicians as they fight to keep music alive in their country. That's February 2nd at 7 p.m. at the Northwest Film Center in the Witzel Auditorium at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on the films and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Mary's Woods, presenting its second annual Martin Luther King Jr. celebration with a talk by civil rights leader and friend of Dr. King, Dr. C.T. Vivian. Dr. Vivian will speak at 2 p.m. on Saturday, January 16th, at the Chapel of the Holy Names at Mary's Woods in Lake Oswego. More at maryswoods.com.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. It is my absolute pleasure to have in the studio with me today, Joe Walsh. He's with Individuals for Justice, and he is fresh off of a federal court win in his fight against Portland City Council, and specifically his fight in an opposition to being continuously banned from participating in Portland City Council meetings. Welcome to the program, Joe.
Thank you. Thank you, Joanne.
It is such a pleasure to have you here. And if you need to take a break, because I know breathing sometimes gets challenging, just let me know. Just like give me a thumbs up or something.
Okay.
And I can always fill in. And so for listeners, if you want to join the conversation, I'm going to give Joe a chance to lay out the case for us in just a moment. But the number to call will be 503-231-8187. So you had a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful New Year's present from Judge Michael Simon in Oregon's District Court, that whose opinion came down on 31st of December?
Yes.
And so let's lay it out for the listening audience. There was an issue. You decided to take it to federal court. What was the issue?
Well, the issue was, can a local politician exclude citizens from what I thought was a public hearing? And actually, the city council is not a public hearing. It's semi-public for legal reasons anyway. So what was happening is that the mayor would not only throw an activist out, then he would go back to his office and say, okay, you are now excluded from the entire building for 30 days. Couldn't enter the building. So we crossed into even the public area outside.
So if you even went inside and got coffee, for example.
Oh, they'd arrest us.
You'd be arrested. Okay.
Yes. There was one incident where I went in and I had to use the restroom. Four police were called and they were going to arrest me and then decided not to arrest me. But there were four inside the restroom yelling at me while I was using the restroom. Okay. And I had sent a letter to the mayor saying that under ADA, I needed that kind of stuff.
Right.
They refused to answer that. So I went in, and anyway, they called the cops. They were going to arrest me, and they decided not to arrest me. The question that I had was very simple. Does the mayor have that kind of power to circumvent the First Amendment? So in our conversations on a Wednesday night, a guy by the name of Barry Joe said to me, why don't you take it to federal court? And I said, that kind of an interesting idea.
Can I do that?
Yeah.
Right?
So I went down to the federal court and I got the paperwork and I asked for three things. I asked for them to take jurisdiction, which I wasn't sure they would. I asked them to do it, waive all the fees, because the fees in federal court can run anywhere from $3 to $1,000. It gets expensive, just the fees.
Right.
So I asked him to waive those. And then I asked him to let me do it pro se, which means I would do it without lawyers. I thought that I wouldn't get any of them.
Right.
I got all three. They granted all three of them.
Wonderful.
So I got this phone call from the clerk of the court saying they were setting up a conference call with a federal judge by the name of Michael Simon, who is the judge that oversees the agreement between DOJ and the city.
Right.
I was ecstatic because I did some background on Judge Simon, and he's a fair judge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't.
And we saw that when we went to the fairness hearing, that he was willing to hear from the public much more than I thought he would.
Yes, he went out of his way at the hearing to listen to the public. Well, anyway, they set up the conference call, and in the conference call, we decided that instead of a jury trial, all I wanted was the judge to make the decision.
Right.
Because I had great faith in this judge.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, okay, so we fired briefs back and forth. So I had to learn how to write a brief. So I went online and I learned how to write a brief. So I wrote the briefs.
Right.
And my briefs were only 6 or 9 pages. Mm-hmm. City attorney's briefs were about 40 pages.
Right.
All right. And you have to read all this stuff.
Right.
So I spent most of my time reading what they were submitting. Mm-hmm. And finally we got to the oral arguments. And the first thing the judge said to me, Mr. Walsh, didn't you testify at the hearing about the settlement agreement?
Ah.
So I said, yes, I did, Your Honor.
Right.
And here's what I testified on that he remembered.
Mm-hmm.
I asked him to be a Sirica. Judge Sirica took down President Nixon.
Mm.
And that's what my last thing to the judge, Simon, was. I want you to be a Judge Sirica. You stand there and you tell this city, uh-uh.
The Constitution stands.
That's right. And at my oral arguments, he remembered me because Judge Sirica turned out to be his mentor.
Oh, wow.
You talk about hitting the nail on the head
without
knowing that you were going to do it.
Oh.
Because he said that at the hearing. He said, Mr. Walsh, Judge Sirica was my mentor.
Wow.
So,
well, so
we had this conversation. I could see the city attorneys going, oh, my God, what is this?
It's a setup. It's a setup. And so, you have been excluded from City Hall. How many times?
3 times.
3 times. The first time you were excluded for 30 days?
Yes.
The second time, 60 days?
No, the second time was 30 days again.
30 days again.
Yes.
And then the third time?
Was 60 days.
Was 60 days. And so the third time was when you decided you had enough of this.
Yeah,
and
I was heading towards permanent exclusion. And we don't even know what permanent exclusion means.
Oh.
See, because Skip Davis, who is a video guy that takes video, he's a citizen video guy, he was permanently excluded from the entire building.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting that you would say that because I would think, well, how could you be excluded from the whole building? That's where all the politicians are. That's where supposedly you're supposed to seek redress from your government. How could you be excluded from the entire? I can see saying you can't come to a city council meeting, but I can't see you being excluded from the entire building. So it sounds like Judge Michael Simon agreed with you.
That's right. The 60-day exclusion for me included the entire building.
Right.
So that's what I argued in my brief. I said, in the building itself, for instance, you have the auditor that has nothing to do with city council, that has a great deal to do with investigations and signing up for going before the city council, but is independent of the city council.
Right.
So how can the mayor stop me from going to see the city auditor?
Right. Or the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. That's also in the exact same
All of those, and even the individual council members, does he have the authority to stop me from going there? So that was the question to my briefs.
Right.
I said, you know, how much power did this guy have?
Right.
And Judge Simon said, not so much. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday, when we got into a big battle,
right,
And he was standing there. It was obvious he didn't know anymore
what he could or couldn't
what
do.
He could or couldn't do. Right. Now he can throw me out.
Right.
Now, in the previous life, I used to be a union official, and I ran union meetings, mm-hmm. and we had drunks come in,
right.
and I threw them out with the master at arms. I said, "Hey, get them out of here!"
Right.
But I didn't tell them you could never return.
Right, right.
And that's what he's saying when he said to Kiff Davis, "You are permanently banned
right.
from using City Hall."
Right.
What does that mean?
Right.
Does that mean permanent for the rest of his life?
Right.
Or permanent for the mayor?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Good question. If you're just joining us, I'm talking to Joe Walsh, and we are celebrating his victory at the Federal Circuit Court on December 31st of last year. Got to remember, it's a new year now. Of last year, Judge Michael Simon ruled that the city was in error in excluding people from the city hall because mayor cannot infringe upon your constitutional right to seek redress with your elected officials. Is that the gist of what Michael Simon said? I mean, I read the 28-page opinion, but is that the gist of it?
The First Amendment is known for freedom of religion, freedom of the press, and freedom of assembly, and freedom of speech.
Right.
That's what it's known for. But if you look at the First Amendment, there is another line that says that we have a right to go before our government and talk about grievances.
Yes.
It's the First Amendment.
Right.
It's not the 15th Amendment. It's the first.
Right.
And James Madison didn't use any periods anywhere in that article. He wanted you to take that entire article
right.
all together. And that's what we argued. And Judge Simon, and I'll read some of it. I don't like reading, but I'll read some of it because these are good words. The court declares that on its face, Portland City Code 315, blah, 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 violates the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. The court further permanently enjoins and restrains defendant as follows. Defendants, each of them, and their agents and employees, and all those in active concert or participation with them, shall not direct or enforce any prospective exclusion pursuant to Portland City Code 315, blah, 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 and the city rules of conduct of the City of Portland properties, solely based on past incidents of disruption during city council meetings.
So
that's a permanent injunction. That's what we asked for.
Right.
We asked for the judge to say to the mayor, you've exceeded your authority. Matter of fact, Mr. Mayor, you never had that authority. So now, in the middle of this whole thing, the judge said to me, Mr. Walsh, you know you can sue.
Mm.
And that's when I started to think, I think I won this. He's asking me about suing.
Right.
So I said, well, Your Honor, we're not interested in that. We're only interested in you making a decision whether we live in a democracy
right.
or a dictatorship. I said, that's all I want to know.
Right.
And I said, the money is irrelevant to me. I'm too old. It doesn't make any difference. I want this decision. And we got a permanent injunction against the mayor.
That's pretty phenomenal. And it sounds like it's actually totally confused our city council because they're not quite sure now on what they can do because they've had this very heavy-handed approach of just deciding they don't like your tone, they don't like the fact that you are interrupting, they don't like something about your presentation, so therefore you're gone, right?
Well, we never argued that the mayor doesn't have some tools for disruptions.
Right.
That if somebody comes in and is it disrupted or yells out like we do from time to time, he can remove that person from that hearing.
Right.
Nobody's ever stopped him from doing that.
Right.
And if you don't leave, they can charge you with trespass and have you arrested.
Right.
Nobody's arguing that. You would have to argue individual cases on that.
Right.
We never argued that. We said, look, he can't come back to his office and say, you know what, I don't like that Joe Walsh.
Right.
Now I'm going to give him 60 days.
Right.
And ban him from the whole building. He right. ain't having coffee anywhere.
Right.
So that's what we went after, and that's what we got.
Hmm.
Now they have to go back, and their rules of conduct, there's about 18 or 19 articles under those rules of conduct. They have to rewrite the whole thing because they're so general that they could nail anybody on anything.
Ah.
So they have to go back, and that's why he says he mentions the rules of conduct.
Mm.
They took them all down. They used to have them up right out front.
Uh-huh.
They're all gone.
Uh-huh.
So they did that. They took them down. And one of my friends proposed that I should send a letter to the city attorney and say, you know what? Since what you did was totally illegal, every act and every vote that I was deprived of not being there to express my opinion is now null and void. And I want you to go back on every one of them and redo them. And I think we could do that. But
I don't know about that. But anyway, let's go to the phone line. Good morning, Joanne. Welcome to KBOO. Hi, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Joanne, are you there?
Oh, hello, yes. Yes, I was just connected. Yes, Joanne. Yes, your music, getting back to your music, stand up for your rights. I want to tell you what happened to me last week, the last day of the year. my manager forced me to come in for a meeting, and she told me, they're going to get, I'll get a second step of possible eviction. And not only, I had canceled the appointment because someone told me I didn't have to keep the appointment with the manager. And not only that, the day before, on Wednesday the 30th, I was out. And I come home in late afternoon, and I get a knock on the door a little while later. It was the crisis mental health team. And I realized later, from information I got, it was the manager was behind it to pressure me to go to that meeting on the last day of the year. I want to thank you and Alan Graf and a lot of other people who have trivialized my problems in that and have not given me any real support. And I guess what's behind it is that I'm poor, white, and female. Thank you for listening, Joanne.
Well, thank you for calling, Joanne. You may remember when you got your eviction notice, I called you and you didn't want to talk to me. I offered assistance and you declined. So sorry you're feeling that way today, but hope you have a good day. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Norm. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Well, I like your show.
Hello?
Good morning, Joanne. I like your show.
Thank you, Norm. How are you today?
Good. Joe, why the heck don't you want to sue?
Well, I was taken by surprise. It was in the middle of the arguments when the federal judge said, Mr. Walsh, you can sue. And what went through my mind was that if I say yes, it's going to look like I'm a mercenary, that I'm after money. And I'm really not. I'm not a person that deals with money. My wife does. She worries about it, but I don't really worry about it. I just kind of go through the day and not worry about it. So I didn't want the judge to think I was after money. I wanted to keep this. That's why I did it pro se. I wanted to keep this as pure as I could do it with the simple question, does the mayor have this kind of authority? And if I went after money, it would just complicate things.
Well, okay, fair enough. Thanks, Joe. Congratulations.
Isn't it very cool when the good guys win?
Yeah.
We should learn to celebrate those.
Yes.
We don't get a lot of them.
No,
but
we don't.
I was totally surprised that it came as fast as it did, because the judge said, okay, I'm going to do this within 30 days. And then, and Joanne knows this story, that I was protesting something else and came home, and my wife had two glasses of wine on the cocktail table. And I said, wow, you know, what's going on here? And she said, you got a phone call from the court. You won. They lost. And I could not believe it.
You know? That's great.
Isn't that cool?
It was so cool.
Thank you so much for your call, Norm. We appreciate it. And so, I mean, I posted on my Facebook page the article that was in the Oregonian and said, so for people who say that one person can't make a difference, I give you Joe Walsh, right? And so for people who say, you know, you're just one person. You've been Individuals for Justice for a long time. You show up at city council and county commission meetings, and you show up at protests. So you've been really visible and active for a while. So you must feel pretty proud of yourself, the fact that you were able to take on the mayor and the city council and win. But then the question becomes, what is the long-term win for the community?
Okay, that's a little more difficult. I think for the community, it makes the mayor and the city council members take a step back and say, look, these guys, Joe Walsh and other people that attend the city council meetings, and we do, I've monitored city council meetings through three mayors.
Mm-hmm.
From Potter to Sam Adams to this mayor. So it's not personal as far as the mayor is concerned. It's what they do.
Right.
And I am convinced, after doing a lot of activism throughout my whole life, that there is a very important place for an activist who does not serve on committees, is not involved in the internal part of City Hall, that stays on the outside and looks in and says, no, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. It is very hard to tell somebody that they're wrong if they're giving you a grant. Mm-hmm. So we don't take any grants. Mm-hmm. We don't have any connection with the city at all, except when we go and we criticize them, or from time to time we acknowledge that they do something good. Mm. And the example I'll use is Amanda Fritz's sick leave
policy.
We brought her flowers.
Mm.
So we're on both sides of this. We like to reward politicians when they do something really good. Unfortunately, it's rare. You know, we would like to turn that around and make it, you know, a kind of a weekly thing, because that would be kind of cool. We don't get the feeling that the politicians, whatever happens after they take the oath of office, is interested in the citizens. They are interested in themselves, and their image is everything. And it is absolutely annoying to us.
So I do think that one long-term benefit is there's a permanent injunction against excluding people from City Hall. I mean, that's huge. That's huge. And so though they will come up with different rules and they will come up with some other protocols, I think Judge Simon was really clear in saying, in a democracy, that is just not appropriate. And so what I hope happens is not just the city council, but does the county have a policy of excluding people from Multnomah County commission meetings? Do state legislators have a policy of excluding people? I mean, the potential, because this is a federal decision, is that every government entity should be looking at their policies. And if they are modeling Portland, like so many of them do, it's time for them to change that policy. We got callers stacked up, so we're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Ted. Welcome to K-Boot. Good morning.
It's Ted.
Ted. Hi, Ted. Hi. Good morning.
I just want to say, Joe and Joanne, you're heroes of Portland. Both of you do a great job.
Thank you.
Never been to the city council when Joe wasn't there. He's really there a lot, and thank you. I happened to be at the city council on the day of this incident, and I wondered, Joe, if you would describe, for people sitting in the council, it wasn't clear what had happened. I think Joe had gone out of the chamber for a brief period, and then when he came, and the mayor did something sneaky. Joe, could you say what happened?
Yes. There's a concept in the agenda items in City Hall called consent agenda. And what it's supposed to be is a group of motions that are so routine that you don't really want to waste a lot of time talking about them. It's like paying bills and, you know, small settlements and stuff like that that aren't controversial or really shouldn't be talked or, you know, waste a lot of time. So it's called consent agenda. But under the charter, any person can pull one of those items out and say, no, I want to talk about that. That's what I did. I pulled an item out, and most people are going to get furious over this. I pulled an item out that had to do with transportation under Commissioner Novick was going to transfer $100,000 over to the mayor to pay overtime for the police. And it was on consent agenda, which means no discussion underneath the table, and they wanted to slide it through. So I pulled it.
All right.
Now, I had sent the mayor and a number of the city council people and the clerk letters saying, look, from time to time under ADA, the American Disabilities Act, I have to go to the restroom because of some medical problems, and, you know, I want you to do reasonable accommodations on those times when I'm out. So what happened was when you pull an item under consent agenda, the charter says this, that after the vote of the group in the consent agenda takes place, you have to take that item that's been pulled and have a discussion about it and then vote on it. That's what the charter says. What Charlie Hales does is he moves that item way after the regular business, which means that it takes 2 to 3 hours to get to it. So the people that want to talk about it can't spend that kind of time. So they leave. Well, unfortunately for Charlie, I'm retired. So I can stay. But I have to go to the restrooms. So I was out in the restrooms, and he pulled it out of order, and they voted on it. So when I walked back in, I mean, my oxygen and all that stuff was still there.
Right.
So they knew I was still there. I walked back in. I was told by a friend, hey, Joe, they voted on that thing. It's gone. So I yelled to Charlie, I wanted to speak on that item. And right. He said, no, we already voted on it. Okay. I said, you can't do that. I pulled it. I want to talk about it. So we got into this big battle going back and forth. And finally, they threw me out.
Right.
And that's when I got the 60-day excursion. And that's when I just said, enough is enough.
That was very sneaky of the mayor.
Oh, it was awful.
Well, and it sounds intentional. I mean, you don't until the one person who said, let's pull this item so we can discuss it, leaves the room and then just then decide, okay, now's a great time to vote on it.
There's no question. That was really inexcusable. Could you clarify? So you can't be, no one can be excluded from City Hall in this way, but what about exclusion from the council itself? Does this ruling speak to that?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, just for that. So if you're disruptive in a meeting, you can be escorted out of that meeting, but you cannot be excluded either from City Hall or the city council
for
previous behavior.
Right. So you can come to the next city council meeting and you can't be excluded.
Well, yes. Right. They can kick you out of that meeting if you're disruptive.
I see.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much. And thank you both of you for all your great work.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Thank you.
Have a great day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, Karen. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
I concur. I think that you and Joe do great work. And I was at the Sandra Bland vigil that that you organized.
Right.
You had brought up the possibility of going to the city council and trying to get some kind of a decision made by them in regards to Sandra Bland's, well, the treatment that was so criminal of Sandra Bland. And I wondered whether there was any progress on that and whether we would hear something about it in advance, hopefully.
Yes, if we decide to move forward, one of the organizers, Tom Hastings, had an idea that if we could get the city council to like pass a resolution to support the community's call for an investigation and an indictment into her death, that might help the family as they are seeking justice for their lost loved one. Quite frankly, this particular city council, I don't know that they would even consider passing a resolution of that sort. I have to say we haven't asked them yet, but we will have we will be meeting on the 13th of this month. And we will decide then whether or not that we're going to be meeting, putting pressure on the city council to pass the resolution in that manner.
Yeah, you had that. Thank you. You had also mentioned something about trying to do some kind of conflict resolution work with the police here in Portland. Do you think that will go forward or?
Well, we've been trying to influence Portland police training for quite a few years, and so I hope we have the Community Oversight Advisory Board, which I may have spoke about, which is responsible for providing oversight on the Department of Justice settlement agreement, and that body is talking about developing that type of training curriculum. Whether or not they will or not, it's, I think, too early to tell. But I think all those ideas are on the table. What I'd love to see is some kind of national best practice. Is there a best practice around teaching police de-escalation techniques? And if so, what community is good at that? And how do we make sure that we get that training here so that people locally understand the need for that training?
Right. Well, thank you so much for doing this. So it's just so crucial. And I really appreciate all the work that you do. Thank you, Joanne.
Thank you. Appreciate your call. And Joe, I gotta say, you know, it's what I love about you as an activist is you're retired. You have the option to do whatever it is your heart desires that Patty would let you get away with. And you spend a lot of time really following governmental processes that most of us, because of work or school or family or other commitments, just couldn't possibly follow. And so for you, you've been able to see how city councils operate. And as you said, you've been following three mayors. Is this one uniquely different than, say, Mayor Sam Adams or Tom Potter's administration? The operation.
I think so. Mayor Hales is I call him the hitman. And what he's done is he was a city council person in 2002. And his big legacy, when he left on his second term right in the middle, quit. And went and got himself a job as a lobbyist. And he worked. And he worked in private industry. And he got through the streetcar. Now, from this point on, this is my opinion, just my opinion. The streetcar is sucking us dry. And here's why. The building of the streetcar and the tracks and the cars themselves was huge. It was a lot of money. All of that money came out of transportation, okay? 7 years ago, it used to be that about two-thirds of the money in transportation would go to maintenance. Mm. Now it's 50%. Mm. So they took a big chunk out of that. Now, when you build a streetcar, it runs along Grand Avenue. And right next to it is the number six bus from TriMet. Mm. Why do we have the two of them running? It doesn't make any sense. We're not picking up any of the customers from the six bus. What we're doing is we're riding these streetcars, and they are specifically designed for companies along the route for people to jump off and go shopping. That's what they're designed to do. Hmm. Okay? However, those people that benefit from those are not paying a lot of money. Hmm. So we should go after those. When Novick comes up with his formula, it's got to be heavy on that. But the streetcar, Mayor Hales, in 2002, said, this is great. Now he comes back, and the people of Portland elect a mayor. And as mayor, he led the charge to cover the reservoirs. To cover the reservoirs, it's going to cost us about $1 billion. The estimates run anywhere from $800 million to $1 billion. Mm. Now, we're going to put that off, and we're going to pay that, on a little monthly payment here and a little monthly payment. It's $1 billion. Mm. It sucks us dry. And guess what? The mayor's leaving again. So I call him the corporate hitman. He comes in, gets a streetcar, causes damage, 2002. Now he's back. He's the mayor. He's not running again. He's got the reservoir done. And what else is there to do? So he's leaving again. That's what he is. He is the hitman for the corporations. So he's very different than Sam Adams and Potter. Potter I really like, by the way.
We're going to go back to the phone line. We got callers stacked up. Good morning, Boff. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
And Joe, I would like to say very much congratulations. And you talked briefly about not wanting to take grants or money because that would influence your neutrality or your ability to comment on actions of the council or actions of any political body. And that's a laudable outlook, and I want to pull a parallel here to the radio station you're talking on, is that we don't take a lot of money from corporates and political entities, mostly because they won't give us any, but but also the fact that we say what needs to be said through the focus of people like Joanne and many other air personalities and backstage researchers and people that, you know, beat the bushes for good information and bring it forward. And you're a credit to your city, and you're a credit to the political citizen. And I want to applaud you for that.
Thanks, Bart.
On your Sandra Bland efforts... Mm-hmm. You may or may not know that the Texas State Trooper who was involved in the traffic stop has been fired and has been indicted for perjury.
Excellent. No, I did not know that.
That's just come up as a news squib, and so I'm sure there's more information out there. But
yay.
Apparently the wheels of justice are not completely rusted.
Oh, so they're turning. They just aren't turning quick enough. Yep. Well, thank you. That is good news to hear. Appreciate that update.
The only other aspect that I think both of you and KBOO and Joe represent is historical memory. The fact that he's been there for three different administrations, and he's seen what works or how it works or what the bureaucratic mechanisms are and what the dodges are and what the, in fact, what the good things are, and knows what passes the sniff test and what does not. Thanks for your work. Good luck in the future.
Thank you so much for your call, Bart. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
One of the things that I learned after about 40 years of activism is I classify people in three different categories. There are activists, there are advocates, and there are diplomats. Activists are outside. We don't take grants. We don't take money. It's very hard to yell at somebody and then ask them for a check. Really hard to do that.
I've done that constantly in my career, but go ahead.
the advocates come in after us. We throw the rocks. I always say we throw rocks in the ocean of corruption, and it's a little splash, not much, but...
Activists, advocates, and...
And then you have the diplomats. The diplomats come in, and they come in, and they smooth it all over, and they... offer alternatives, and they offer jurisdictions, they offer maybe ordinances and stuff like that. All three, as far as I'm concerned, are equally important. And sometimes we get a little bit confused of which one we are. I'm very comfortable throwing rocks. I really am. I am not comfortable being a diplomat where I'm trying to smooth things out. Now...
Hang on for a sec, Joe. Let me tell folks what's coming up on KBOO today. At 9, it's Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know, with Teresa Mitchell. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Pear interviews Michael Lofgren about his new book, The Deep State, The Fall of the Constitution and the Rise of a Shadow Government. Thank you so much, KBOO, for your support. If you have not become a member yet, you can go online to kboo.fm, click the tip jar, and become a member that way. So, activist, advocate, and diplomat. We're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Francis. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi. Good morning. I just wanted to express my appreciation for Joe. I've seen him at city council meetings over the years, and I think I didn't really meet him until... he came to the vigil for Keith and Otis, and I appreciate what he does, and I admire the man greatly. I think that the fact that he shows up every month for Keaton's vigil is impressive. I don't meet very many people that are that dedicated to the cause, and I just want to say again how... special this man is.
He's sitting here blushing. I want you to know he's like blushing all over himself.
Well, that's good.
It is good. He deserves all these cheers and appreciations.
Yeah, and I'm very happy that he won the case with the judge and with the federal court. I believe that shows a very, very strong determination right there, just the fact that he even proceeded with that process there.
Well, what I love is the city sent out their top guns. They sent out a senior senior trial attorney, and they sent out a assistant attorney, and they had, you know, these huge legal minds that came up with, what do you say, 50 plus cases that they wanted Judge Simon to review, and Judge Simon didn't fall for the smoke and mirrors, just like he doesn't normally fall for the smoke and mirrors, and he didn't fall for it this time. So
I kind of appreciate that judge quite a bit too.
me too. He's becoming my favorite federal judge.
I appreciate mostly the fact that people show up for Keaton's vigil.
Yes.
You know, that he is remembered and recognized.
Yes.
In Sandra Bland's case, I just heard that the officer was, the grand jury wouldn't bring any charges against the people at the jail for her hanging, but they did bring charges against the policeman who said he perjured himself.
Right, the sheriff. They fired him, and they fired him, and now they're bringing charges, yes.
Right. And also, the family just was on television. I missed them, but they don't trust the system at all. They want to know why he wasn't charged with something like assault and battery rather than just perjury. So it's an ongoing situation.
Slow, yes, ongoing, slow But, yeah. But you know, what else are you going to do? You can't just let these things go unchallenged.
No,
thank you,
you
so much for your call.
All right, you guys take care.
You too. I guess we'll see you on the 12th.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank
excellent.
You.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Back to the phone line. Hello, James. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Congratulations, Joe, on winning against the city. That's awesome. It's like a, it's great when you know people with their hearts in the right place actually, you know, come out on top and show that you can make a difference. That's really great. So, did you actually get to did they just pass the thing concerning the cops, or did you actually get a chance to speak on it like you had planned to?
Oh, they passed it. No, he didn't get a chance to speak on it.
That's a shame, you know. Well,
but it's not unusual either that there's just so many funding items that just slide through city council. And if the public isn't aware, I mean, sometimes I spend Friday evenings looking at the website to see what's coming up the next week, because it's not like they let the public know when they have these controversial votes coming up.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and it's terrible because, you know, it's like, you know, it sucks that the only way, and I mean, and I say this from a place that I really don't have a lot of hate because I try to find the understanding and things, but it sucks that, you know, that the only way cops can make a decent living is through that type of overtime, but the fact that it comes out of the city budget and not the police budget is kind of a pain in the butt, you know.
Well, I hope that the public would really spend some time in 2016 looking at the Portland Police Bureau's budget, right? And this is a great time to start because, right, the budget doesn't get passed until May. So this would be a really good time to start just looking at the budget for the police bureau. What you will find is it increases by at least $5 to $10 million every single budget cycle.
Really?
And the last couple of years, all you have to say is DOJ, and the city council has given the Portland Police Bureau anything they've asked for, and whether it makes sense or not. And I know I've stopped at least two expenditures that the previous police chief lied to the city council and said it was for the DOJ settlement agreement, and it wasn't. And I had to actually read the settlement agreement to the city council so that they would know that they were actually being lied to by their police chief. And twice I was able to stop them from voting on something that would have given significant resources to the police, because the police said that they were supposed to get it because of the settlement agreement. But and like Joe, I get paid zero to actually tell the city council what they should already know, because they should have already read the settlement agreement and they should already understand what their obligations are as it relates to the Department of Justice in Portland Police. But it's clear anytime it turns up at city council, they don't have a clue.
So if I gave you my email address, either on air or off, doesn't really matter, could you send me information for that?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I'll have my engineer, just hang on, and my engineer will grab your email. We don't want the world to have your email address.
Okay.
unless you want the world to have it. But otherwise, hang on, and my engineer, Steve, will get it from you.
And I will send it to you, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And once again, thank you guys for the work that you do. You guys are awesome.
Thank you. Appreciate your call. And Joe, I don't want us to let this hour end without us talking about the sweeps that are taking place with the houseless community all over this city. Now, I recall the mayor's declaring a housing emergency and declaring a stay as far as sweeps, that there would be no sweeps. It was too cold. The weather was too severe. Yet I am constantly getting email communication of ODOT sweeps that are taking place all throughout the city of Portland. What can you tell me about that?
Okay. First of all, ODOT is the state.
Right.
It's not ODOT in the city. So
not PDOT. It's ODOT.
Right. These abbreviations.
Portland Department of Transportation,
yeah.
Oregon Department of Transportation.
It's the Oregon Department of Transportation that are saying, look, we have to clean up these areas And we just happen to have tents in the areas. So we're going to clean them up. Here's what happens with a sweep. They take all of the stuff.
All the worldly possessions.
That a poor person owned.
Yes.
The tents, the medications, the sleeping bag, the blankets.
The socks.
And you know where a lot of this stuff comes from is that we go out, different charities hold events, and they come up with this stuff and give it to the homeless to keep them warm. And ODOT from the state comes in and takes everything. Now, by law, they have to keep it for 30 days. Here's the problem. When you go down to the storage area to get your stuff, how are you going to prove that that tent is yours?
Right.
Unless you have your name on it.
Right.
Unless there's some way to identify it. And people that are living on the streets they're not that organized. So they go down and they can't get their stuff back. Some of them can't even get there because they have no money.
No transportation to get there.
So I asked one of the city attorneys that I get along with one time. I said, how many people actually go down and get stuff back?
Right.
And he said, zero, Joe. He said, it's so complicated to get it back, zero. And we sell the stuff later on. How's that? So you have like the private contractors.
The police bureau sells it?
The private contractors come in, they put it into storage, the police take it as stuff that has been confiscated, they keep it for 30 days by law, and then they can sell it. Isn't that cool?
No,
so that's why you hear me in front of City Hall saying the mayor steals from the poor and gives to the rich, because that's what he's doing.
That's crazy. During the coldest time in the last few weeks that we've had in Oregon in quite some time, there have been sweeps happening almost daily of houseless people in this community. And my recommendation would be that if it's not the mayor, the responsibility is with the mayor. And so if it is ODOT, that's the responsible party, the mayor can actually pick up the phone and call ODOT and tell him that we are in a state of emergency when it comes to housing and we need to stop doing that. If the city is contracting with private security and other firms to take houseless people's belongings and then they get to sell it in 30 days, that's a problem. I think we should be talking to the mayor about stopping that immediately. And so hopefully people know that they can actually call their mayor at 503-823-4120. That's his phone number. And he's at City Hall, and he works for us. Back to the phone line. Hello, Don. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hey, it's a pleasure to talk to you two rebel rousers.
Takes one to know one.
Yeah, this is wonderful. I'm sure the mayor's having a horrible day today listening to you guys.
I bet he is.
Hey,
I love
Charlie,
it.
How's it going out there?
Hey, my New Year resolution is to be nicer to the mayor, and it's not working.
Hey, this is one good thing is that me and Joanne have talked about this because I've been an advocate for disability rights for a long time. So you did a great service to us, Joe.
Yes.
But hey, the thing about Michael Simon is, you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. We're losing faith in this guy because we felt like, you know, the city brought in a guy from Chicago instead of a couple of local people to oversee the police.
Yes.
He wants to hire more police. He's, he's not doing anything that, you know, this whole settlement, I feel, was just another Amanda Marshall sort of operation. And it really had nothing to do with helping us, the people who are really being targeted out here. And the fact that African-Americans weren't even part of it kind of proves that it was a way to sham the disabled because they thought, well, these guys won't even know what we're doing. So, and that's probably why, you know, they give them 50 pages. It's like the TPP. They give 70,000 pages to read.
We're
supposed to suck it up and learn it, and it's just part of the system. But this is great news because it restores my faith in Michael Simon that maybe he'll come back and fix this problem because they are very. You said that you went in the bathroom and they were screaming at you in the bathroom, harassing you?
Yeah, we are going to have to go. Yes, that is correct. Joe was in the restroom and they sent four police officers in to make that happen. Thank you so much for your call, Dawn. I agree. I think we have hope. We have faith that good things are possible. Joe, thank you so, so much for being here today. And thank you for fighting for us, regular people, to be able to have our voice heard at City Hall. You've been listening to Joanne Hardesty. It's been Voices from the Edge. See you next week. Same place, same time, same station. Have a fabulous day.
Stand up for your right. Get up.
Good morning. KBOO Portland is your community radio station. At a minute before 9 o'clock on this Thursday morning, here's a look at what's coming up this morning. In a half hour, join us for Fight the Empire. Host Per Fogering interviews Mike Lofgren about his new book, The Deep State, The Fall of the Constitution and the Rise of a Shadow Government. At 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. And then at 10:15, Flashpoints looks at the Aliso Canyon gas leak disaster, stopping police killings, and the impending ICE crackdown on undocumented immigrants from Central America. At 11 on Between the Covers, we hear an interview with Paul Theroux on his latest travel book, Deep South, about his road trip through the backwoods of the southern United States. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, the guest is Carol McKay Booker, editor of Alone Atop the Hill, the autobiography of Alice Dunnigan, pioneer of the National Black Press. That's all coming up this morning after Press Watch. It's news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell right after this.
Tune in to the podcast Probable Cause This on the KBOO website, kboo.fm